I'm Amy Rosenberg.
I'm Ken Nash.
And we're building bridges. Martin Luther King gave his final sermon 55 years ago and warned of fascist takeover. Yes, 55 years ago, August 4th, a single bullet robbed us of one of the world's most eloquent and prophetic voices for human rights and justice. Dr. Michael Honey, Professor Emeritus of Humanities at the University of Washington, Tacoma, and who served as the Harry Bridges Chair of Labor Studies and as President of the Labor and Working Class History Association, who specialized in African American civil rights and labor history research and instruction, who is the author of All Labor Has Dignity, a work on MLK's legacy, and To the Promised Land, Martin Luther King and the Fight for Economic Justice, and Going Down Jericho Road, the Memphis Strike, Martin Luther King's Last Campaign, is with us.
Professor Honey joins us to explore King's profound commitment to the poor and working class and his call for resistance to all forms of oppression, including the economic injustice that takes necessities from the masses to give luxuries to the classes.
Professor Honey, let's listen to a clip from Martin Luther King speaking shortly before his death on what's become known as the Three Evils speech, that is, the foundational pillars of what he recognized as systemic oppression of the human condition, racism, poverty, and militarism. Let's listen.
We also know that no matter how dynamically the economy develops and expands, it does not eliminate all poverty. We must create full employment, or we must create income. Guaranteed annual income could be done for about $20 billion a year. And if our nation can spend $35 billion a year to fight an unjust, evil war in Vietnam, it can spend billions of dollars to put God's children on their own two feet right here on earth. As we talk about where do we go from here, the movement must address itself to the question of restructuring the whole of American society. There are 40 million poor people here. One day we must ask the question, why are there 40 million poor people in America? And when you begin to ask that question, you're raising a question about the economic system, about a broader distribution of wealth. When you ask that question, you begin to question the capitalistic economy. More and more, we've got to begin to ask questions about the whole society. We are called upon to help the discouraged beggars in life's marketplace. But one day we must come to see that an edifice which produces beggars needs restructuring. Yes. When you deal with this, you begin to ask the question, who owns the oil? You begin to ask the question, who owns the iron ore? These are words that must be said. Now, when I say questioning the whole society, it means ultimately coming to see that the problem of racism, the problem of economic exploitation, and the problem of war are all tied together. These are the triple evils that are interrelated. In other words, your whole structure must be changed. A nation that will keep people in slavery for 244 years will thingify them and make them things. And therefore, they will exploit them and poor people generally, economically. And a nation that will exploit economically will have to have foreign investments and everything else, and it will have to use its military might to protect them. All of these problems are tied together. We must go from this convention and say, America, you must be born again.
Professor Honey, take us down Martin Luther King's Jericho Road to understand his evolution or development to this fierce critique of capitalism, his holistic critique that saw the intersectionality of racism, poverty, and militarism, from civil rights to human rights, from civil rights to and with economic rights and empowerment.
And I'm still applauding that clip, even that clip of MLK just stimulates my activist sensitivities and informs my intellect. And you're going to continue to take us on that road, Professor Honey.
So, Ken and Mimi, hi. I'm down in California on a trip working on all of these issues as a scholar and doing some filmmaking, too, with Reverend James Lawson, who was part of King's campaign around poverty, racism, and militarism, and who's still with us at age 94 today, still fighting on these same issues, and he's the closest person to King that we still have, I'd say, as a preacher who ties all these issues together. That clip that you were playing from August 1967 at the Southern Christian Leadership Conference is so brilliant, and it's part of what became the book, Where Do We Go From Here, Chaos or Community. You know, people don't often hear this, but there's a lot of speeches and explanations that King gave over the years that people don't hear very much. I found a whole box of speeches like that in the King Archive in Atlanta, and the box was called King's Labor Speeches. And this was quite a few years ago I discovered this, and I didn't know that there were labor speeches. And I found that he had been going to unions ever since the Montgomery bus boycott. The Packing House Workers Union, other unions supported him, Highlander Folk School, UAW, International Longshore and Warehouse Union, RWDSU, 1199 Hospital Workers. King was very tied in with the more progressive, activist, civil rights-based unions. Around that same time of that speech you played, he gave the keynote speech at Labor for Peace, where people were trying to create a labor-based coalition against the war in Vietnam. That's what he was coming up against, and you hear it in his militancy and his anger, that what he called the first phase of the civil rights movement was 55 to 65, winning equality before the law, finally getting rid of making the segregation laws illegal under the Constitution, then the Voting Rights Act of 1965. And of course, we lost many lives in those battles. But then King didn't stop, and he said, this is just the first phase of our movement. We can't address these other issues of racism, poverty, and militarism until we get the right to be citizens. But then when we're citizenship rights are there, we have to push on to the other things that are afflicting not only Black America, but all Americans, white and Black and Native American and Puerto Rican, and on down the line of people who are specially oppressed or who are oppressed by class. You hear that in this speech. Then, of course, he had to figure out, well, how do I carry these words into action? And so by August of 67, he's tried one way to do that, which was the Chicago campaign for open housing in 1966, after the Voting Rights Act was passed, and didn't have a lot of success with that. From there, he went to the idea of a poor people's campaign, which actually Senator Robert F. Kennedy was the one who suggested that. Bring the poor people to Washington, show people in Congress what poverty really looks like. So by the time he's giving this speech that you just played, he's well on that path, and he's trying to bring together the unions, the anti-war movement, students, women, and the whole spectrum of the movement of that time period, Black Power, everybody. He thought, here's something we can agree on, which is trying to end poverty in America. But we can't end poverty in America without also getting rid of the military budget, where all the money is going like into an evil suction tube, is what he called it. So by necessity, tying all the issues together toward the end of his life. But actually, he'd been doing this all along. Coretta King, his wife, had been pushing the peace issues publicly long before Dr. King did, and he agreed with her, but he was trying to work on this first phase and get these other things passed. After that, he became openly, strongly against the war and probably made the most brilliant and attacked speech around the war on April 4th, 1967. So that takes us 1 year later to Memphis, April 4th, 1968, and his assassination. That was a terrible time, followed by the murder of Robert F. Kennedy as well. It was a horrible moment in the movement of the 60s. I try not to focus so much on that, but on what was happening, where this was all going.
Well, Michael, as we get into that, you mentioned Memphis. That's mm-hmm. where it all kind of comes together. The labor activism, the labor struggle, and the evolution and development of the Poor People's Campaign. So why was there such resistance to King, who you said was on this trajectory of really bringing together the basic three strands of civil rights, immigrants, and labor organizing to a systemic view of why these oppressions were happening? But why was there such resistance, and why was King so intent on bringing the struggle to Memphis?
He wasn't trying to bring it to Memphis. He was taking the Poor People's Campaign from one community to the other. He was on a tour of the southern states when he ended up in Memphis on March 18th, 1968. He didn't have Memphis targeted particularly, but the local people in Memphis built an incredible movement starting on February 2nd when two men were killed. Unnecessarily, they were in the back of a sanitation truck. The workers there had poverty wages. They worked at will. They could be fired on a moment's notice. If they got hurt, their problem. No workman's compensation, no union rights, treated almost like slaves. The white population of Memphis, for the most part, thought this is the way it should be, and people called it the plantation mentality. People came from these plantation districts, both white and black, in the 1930s, 40s, and 50s. And black people were coming to the city for opportunity. Many of the white people also, the mechanization of the cotton economy and soybeans and all of that, people were losing their jobs in the countryside. So what happened in Memphis brought King to Memphis.
And we should say that we were talking about the sanitation workers of Memphis, and the two workers killed were sanitation workers who were shielding themselves from an electrical storm mm-hmm. by going into the back of the sanitation truck. And unfortunately, the crushing device triggered and they were crushed to death.
Yeah, that was the thing that set off this incredible strike of 1,300 black men. There's a podcast coming out April 4th called The I Am Story, and you can find it. It's a series of stories about the Memphis strike and about King, The I Am Story, put out by AFSCME, the union that was involved in the Memphis sanitation strike. Those men should never have died. It was faulty equipment. They had complained about it over and over again. That truck should never have been on the road. But this was how they were treated all the time. And the mayor then was Henry Loeb, who was a prime example of the plantation mentality. So you mentioned earlier, like, what was the resistance to King trying to tie these issues together? In Memphis, there was massive anti-communism all through the 40s and 50s and 60s that shut off all the issues. Huge police brutality, like 95% white police force. These were people from the plantation districts. You know, had that plantation mentality. The evangelical right wing was very powerful in Memphis, and there were plenty of people in Memphis who hated King or anything having to do with King. And so this was hostile terrain. The workers themselves called this strike. AFSCME, the union, didn't even know what was happening. But after these deaths, people met on the weekend and they said, this is it, we're going on strike. And it was a lot like the Montgomery bus boycott. They had a meeting on a Sunday, and on a Monday, nobody went to work. And so this built up over a week. And before Dr. King came in to Memphis, they'd had a police riot attacking marchers. They had the city council turn them out numerous times when they thought they were getting a solution. And they brought King in on March 18th because they needed publicity. King could bring the cameras, and the other thing that he brought was this amazing ability that he had to explain issues in a big framework. So this wasn't just a strike about black sanitation workers. This was what he said in the volume that I edited of his labor speeches, all labor has dignity. This is about the dignity of workers and of people in general. And then that I am a man slogan was about that. And I'm not a boy. I'm not your uncle. I'm a worker. I deserve rights.
The workers carried placards that said, as their slogan during the strike, I am a man. I am a man. And there's some. But I still thought that not only because of the danger and the backwardness of Memphis, that there were those people within the campaign of King that didn't really want to see perhaps a full melding of the civil rights, human rights, and economic rights strategy, that perhaps that was going too far against the grain of the state. Am I right? That was also part of the resistance to King going to Memphis from some of his own captains?
The people on his staff agreed with him in the things that he said in August of 67 that you played. It wasn't a political disagreement. It was that they were afraid that if he went to Memphis, he would get pulled into what we would think of as a local struggle. This had happened to him numerous times in Georgia, Albany, Georgia. This had happened earlier in the 60s where he went to give one speech and ended up there for months and in jail. And so they were afraid if he went to Memphis, it wouldn't just be giving a speech. And of course, they were completely right. He went to Memphis, gave this brilliant speech.
Ken, didn't you prepare a clip? And we're going to continue with you in a moment, but
yeah, it was a brilliant
set it up
speech.
For us.
I had to cut it down, but we got it down to about 3 or 4 minutes, which gives a flavor of the speech and how he's exuberant of the response of the workers, both to the speech and to the strike itself.
Yeah, so let's hear that to give that flavor. And then Michael Honey, who is our guest, will continue talking about the Memphis campaign.
To all of the sanitation workers and their families, and to all of my brothers and sisters, I need not pause to say how very delighted I am to be in Memphis, to see you here in such large enthusiastic numbers. As I came in tonight, I turned around and said, they really have a great movement here in Memphis. And you are demonstrating that we are all tied in a single garment of destiny. If one black person suffers, if one black person is down, we are all down. And this lets me know that we are ready for action. You are demanding that this city will respect the dignity of labor, that whenever you are engaged in work that serves humanity, it has dignity. Yeah. One day our society will come to respect the sanitation worker if it is to survive, for the person who picks up our garbage as in the final analysis is as significant as the physician, for if he doesn't do his job, disease is a rampant. All labor has dignity. But you are doing another thing. You are reminding not only Memphis, but you are reminding the nation that it is a crime for people to live in this rich nation and receive starvation wages. I tell you what you ought to do, and you're together here enough to do it. In a few days, you ought to get together and just have a general work stoppage in the city of Memphis. that day come. Not a Negro in this city will go to any job downtown.
Whoa.
Yeah, right.
Fired up, won't take no more. This was like the culmination, Michael Honey, in so many ways, of the intersection, really, the view on racism and structures of power as interconnected. It especially speaks to organizing poor workers in the civil rights movement tradition of direct action to challenge economic and racial inequality and oppression.
This is why in Memphis, I don't live in Memphis anymore, but I used to. April 4th is always a special day, not just of mourning when we lost Dr. King. It's a day when people come together to remember what it was all about. In 2018, which was 50 years since King was killed, we had masses of people from all over the planet there. And it was resistance to the Trump government. It was resistance to anti-unionism. It was resistance to police brutality. And it went on from there. All these issues are alive today. King left behind a great body of work and analysis that is really useful in terms of talking about things today. And I would just, at the end here, say people can make great use of the historical research that has happened. When I started doing it, the Memphis strike, there was really no story about the strike that had been written. Now we have Going Down Jericho Road, which is a very thorough, taking you there sort of story. We also have a film called Love and Solidarity about James Lawson and how he carried that struggle on into Los Angeles. He was the black leader of the ministers in Memphis. And you can get that on Viv called Love and Solidarity, these issues. And they're so pertinent to now. Drawing on the language of the black freedom struggle really helps to put it all into perspective.
Still want to draw out from you, aside from the fact that people should definitely get on board with Reverend James Lawson, who brought King into the Memphis struggle and continued his work and really is the bridge, the film Love and Solidarity by this amazing man who is still with us at 94 and has been organizing all of this time, a lifelong activist in the civil rights and workers' movement. He knew and worked with Dr. King. He studied the nonviolence resistance of Mahatma Gandhi, and he advised and was allied with, jailed with, the Freedom Riders and so on. So you got to get on board with that. But Michael, I don't think finished with really the lessons of King's involvement and the significance in the Memphis strike, his long last campaign, and then what was on the horizon, which was to organize the Poor People's March, which would seem to carry those issues of civil, human rights, justice, intermingled with economic justice to the level of really contesting state power.
People in the movement, not just King, I mean, he was, you know, we don't give all the credit to Dr. King, but he was a marvelous spokesperson and leader. He always wanted to have something at the end that you won, whatever campaign it would be. And so at the end of the Memphis strike, they got union rights, which was what they were fighting for. And public employee unionism exploded across America in the 1970s when the labor movement was declining in industries. So King had an important, and the Memphis workers had an important turning point for the labor movement. And then secondarily, all of the work against war, you know, we've carried that on for 55 years since then. It's kind of legacy, I think, is how you have to think about it. You don't always win something specific like union rights in Memphis. Sometimes you win an understanding of things. And I think that's what that time period and the speeches and writings of King, Lawson, and other people, that's why we go back to them. It's not nostalgia or something. It's analysis and it's legacy and understanding of what the movement has done, which really tremendous. But the fight goes on, the Starbucks workers, and many other workers. And in Memphis, the sanitation workers are still suffering. They're essential workers. There are not enough of them. They're overburdened with too much work, just like other essential workers. They still have their union rights, but in economic difficulty. So the labor and civil rights framework of connection and the fight for equality for all people, that's still where we are, and it's important to know where we are.
Your final thought on King, the legacy for the labor movement, for economic rights, for bringing together the issue of racism, poverty, militarism, and the road, our Jericho Road.
Well, you know, his last book was called Where Do We Go From Here? That's a good place to start. And the subtitle was Chaos or Community? And we're facing some of the most overwhelming issues that anybody has faced historically. And we have a book that just came out with James Lawson called Revolutionary Nonviolence Organizing for Freedom. He says, we are perhaps the first generation of people who are contending with the full spectrum of the issues that afflict the human family. There are no guarantees, but it's important to act as if it were possible to radically transform the world. That's the prophetic voice. That's the voice that King had. And I think that's what we still need. We cannot get discouraged, cannot turn back. We cannot go silent. Keep organizing. And we're getting there with the union movement, and it's good to see it. We're on an upswing. So I don't think it's any time for people to get discouraged and fall back.
Michael Honey, author of All Labor Has Dignity, and To the Promised Land, Martin Luther King and the Fight for Economic Justice, and Going Down Jericho Road, the Memphis Strike, Martin Luther King's last campaign, but not hardly, because his words, his sentiments, his activism, even at his young age of 36 when he passed 55 years ago, April 4th, are extraordinary educators for us today and for people who care about equal rights and justice to make it a reality that all labor has dignity. Michael Honey, you're wonderful. Your work is so important. And make sure that you check out Michael Honey's work, both the film and book on James Lawson, who continued the struggle, 94 years and counting, still struggling in as part of the legacy and tradition of Martin Luther King, and in his own right, the Reverend James Lawson. Michael Honey, thank you so much for joining us. I'm Mimi Rosenberg.
I'm Ken Nash.
And we say, educate, agitate, and organize.